Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Wednesday, February 15th, 2023 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good afternoon. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
Very good, thank you. And I apologize for those waiting for the children's levy. We have a few quick items that we did not take care of on this morning's agenda. So if you'll give us a little bit of forbearance, we'll take care of those right now, then we'll jump right into the children's levy. Could you please call item 139, please?
Authorize competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Tryon Creek Fish Passage improvement for an estimated cost of $1,247,000.
Commissioner Mapp.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, this item comes to us from the Bureau of Environmental Services. This ordinance authorizes Environmental Services to solicit competitive bids from contractors to build fish passage improvements in Tryon Creek at Southwest Boone's Ferry Road. Here's the backstory on this project. In 2021, the Southwest Boone's Ferry Road culvert was replaced with a bridge, and the creek bed was restored. Unfortunately, portions of the stream bed failed due to design and construction errors, which is why this project does not meet the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife fish passage requirements. In fact, the Oregon Department of State Lands has issued a legally binding consent order that requires the city to repair the fish passage by the end of the summer of 2023, which is why we are hearing this item today. This project will cost approximately $1.2 million. Here to tell us more about this ordinance, we have Kerry Rubin, Interim Plant Manager for Environmental Services, and Allie Young, Capital Projects Manager with BES. Welcome, Team BES.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Mapps. Thank you and good afternoon. My name is Kerry Rubin with the Bureau of Environmental Services. And I am here to introduce our project manager, Allie Young, who will provide you with an overview of this project. Thank you.
Thanks, Kerry, and thank you, commissioners. So yes, I'm the project manager for this project. And again, we're requesting the authorization to advertise the construction contract for the project. Is it up on the screen or do I need to do it?
It is now.
Okay, there we go. Great, thanks so much for that. So I'll have you advance the slide. And to give you We're going to do a quick presentation here, just some background, project goals. I'll speak a bit about our outreach and then our estimate and schedule. So you can go ahead and forward to the next slide. The project's located on Tryon Creek at the Boone's Ferry Road crossing. Tryon Creek flows from the southwest in Portland to the southeast where it hits the Willamette River in the city of Lake Oswego. There's an additional tributary, Arnold Creek, that enters Tryon at the upstream end of the new Boone's Ferry Bridge. And just downstream of the project is Tryon Creek State Park. You can go ahead to the next slide, please. Commissioner Mapps gave you some of the background. And so you can see in the upper left-hand corner, this is what the undersized culvert looked like prior to the removal of that. It was impassable to fish. That was replaced with the bridge. You can see in the lower right-hand side. And you know, while the creek is now flowing freely, the fish passage elements haven't held up to severe flows. And as was mentioned, the creek now fails to meet Department of Fish and Wildlife's fish passage requirements and violates our permit with Department of State Lands. And the city is now under a legally binding consent order with DSL to resolve these permit violations by September 2023. Another issue that came up as a result of the severe flows was the re-exposure of a 18-inch sewer pipe upstream of the bridge, creating a public health risk and a partial fish passage barrier. So that will be addressed through this project. You can go ahead to the next slide, please. So our goals, providing the fish passage per the consent order and ODFW approval, bury the exposed sewer pipe, and stabilizing the channel to improve the natural processes that would allow this kind of erosive energy to dissipate so that we won't see this happen in the future. And then augment fish and wildlife habitat as well as enhance our native plant community. You can go ahead to the next slide, please. Our community outreach and engagement, we have a project website, which is updated. We've sent out update mailers and provided email updates, provided a number of social media posts and focused outreach to adjacent property owners. We're working with Portland Public Schools Transportation to coordinate any school bus impacts on Boone's Ferry. And we've made a number of public presentations to the Friends of Tryon Creek and the Tryon Creek Watershed Council, and then answered individual correspondence, responded to individual correspondence from the community, any input or concerns. The next slide, please. Our engineer's estimate coming in with a high confidence level is $1,247,000. We're looking to advertise the project by the end of this month, and to begin construction this June to last 5 months. It's important to know that construction can only take place during a specified in-water work window, which is regulated by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife for migratory fish protection. So we need to align construction with that window. And again, the consent order deadline is September 2023. And that's all I have. If you have any questions, we can answer them.
I have an obvious question, which is the timeline doesn't match up. How do we complete this by September of 2023 if it takes 5 months and it starts in June?
Oh, well, they'll be post after the in-water work window closes and we've completed the fish repair. There's going to be follow-on work where, you know, we're pulling out of the construction area, closing up our construction entrance, making any repairs to Arnold Road. We're going to have to close down a portion of Arnold Road. So there'll be follow-up work outside of the in-water work window.
So this works with DSL. There's not a problem here.
Right. Yeah, we'll have all of the in-water work completed by September 2023.
Great. One other question. So did you say this was faulty construction?
Well,
in other words, who's paying for this and why?
It's paid for through the CIP, our capital improvement budget, through BES. And there's a separate case that our city attorney's office has, I believe they're working with outside counsel to go after, to try to get some money out of the contractor and the consulting agency who designed the previous project.
Parallel and separate from this then?
Yes, parallel and separate.
That's a very good answer. I appreciate it. Any other questions, colleagues? Renee, Commissioner Gonzalez.
Just building off the mayor's question, are you aware, are there cure right or remedy rights for the contractor and the design professional on the prior work? I just want to make sure that whatever we're doing now doesn't interfere with our ability to recover there.
Not that I'm aware of. This work has been vetted with the city attorney's office. They're aware of it as far as the their work that they're doing to remedy the other situation.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps.
Sure. I just want to clarify for our colleagues and folks watching at home. I'm a little bit disappointed about how the first phase of this project has gone. I've been working with the Bureau and the city attorney's office to remedy the situation.
Cool. Thank you. Any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Any further discussion? This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
I can certainly see why this is an emergency. I vote aye.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Mapps.
I want to thank staff for today's presentation and for their patience. I know we had to bump you from the morning session. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Good presentation. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Last item from the morning agenda, hopefully a fairly quick one. Item 140, please, an emergency ordinance.
Amend contract with Raymore Construction to increase amount for the Outer Division Multimodal Safety Project for a total of $10,282,592.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, this item comes to us from PBOT. This is a straightforward contract amendment with Raymore Construction for paving and sewer work on Southeast Division between Southeast 82nd and 92nd. Here is the background on this ordinance. PBOT is currently out doing some work on Division. While we've been out in the field, one of the things we've heard from community members is this: you know, as long as PBOT is out here doing work on this section of Division, you know, why don't you guys fix some of the potholes and deal with some of the other basic maintenance problems that plague this street? In answer to this question, PBOT and I got together and we realized that yes, we can do something about this street. In addition, as commissioner in charge of BES, I also know this: in the near future, we're gonna have to rip up Division again in order to install better stormwater infrastructure. And finally, as your public works commissioner, I know that it is ultimately cheaper and less disruptive to fill these potholes and install this improved stormwater infrastructure in one fell swoop. And that is basically the origin story behind this particular ordinance. I'm excited about this ordinance because this item is an example of how breaking down the silos between city bureaus can save taxpayers money and provide better service to the community. This work will be jointly funded by PBOT and BES. The total cost of this project is a little more than $2.7 million. Now, colleagues, before I turn it over to staff to learn more about this presentation, I want to offer one last observation. I know that some community members are skeptical of recent infrastructure changes PBOT has made on Division. I hear those concerns and I take them seriously. And while I'm commissioner of PBOT, the Bureau will evaluate how well every PBOT asset is working in the real world. And if a piece of PBOT infrastructure is not working properly, we will work to fix it. At the same time, the ordinance before us today is about a different issue. The ordinance before us today is about filling potholes, fixing pavement, and building essential stormwater infrastructure in order to save taxpayers money and minimize inconvenience to commuters and residents. And with that, I will turn the floor over to some staff from PBOT, including Elizabeth Tilstrom, Capital Project Manager with PBOT. And she will have a partner here with us today too. Thank you, take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps, for that introduction. And good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Tilstrom. I serve as a Capital Project Manager for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And as the project manager for the Outer Division Multimodal Safety Project, and I'm joined today by Steve Sigethy, the Capital Delivery Division Manager. The ordinance before you today will amend the contract with Raymore Construction, PBOT's prime contractor on the Outer Division Multimodal Safety Project. Briefly, the Outer Division Multimodal Safety Project is a PBOT Vision Zero project aimed at reducing fatal and serious injury crashes on Southeast Division Street between Southeast 80th and Southeast 174th Avenue. Southeast Division Street is a designated high crash corridor with a long history of fatal and serious injury crashes involving people walking, biking, and driving. PBOT's work on the corridor began in 2017 following an emergency declaration by City Council. Early work included lowering the speed limit to 30 miles per hour and installing lighting, fixed speed cameras, and speed reader boards. In the fall of 2022, PBOT reached substantial completion on the permanent safety improvements that comprised enhanced pedestrian crossings, including 10 new signalized crossings, additional street lighting, protected bike lanes, and raised center medians. Regarding this amendment, during construction, the community raised concerns about the condition of the pavement on Southeast Division between Southeast 82nd and 92nd and the related safety issues. In response, the project team worked with PBOT leadership to secure additional funds to repave this section of Division. We also coordinated with our partners at the Bureau of Environmental Services to accelerate their planned system upgrades within the paving area to reduce their future project costs and extend the overall life of the pavement by avoiding new utility cuts. Incorporating the needed pavement and stormwater improvements into the safety project's construction contract also reduced impacts that future construction could have on the community, including impacts to small businesses and people traveling along the corridor. Finally, this contract amendment also includes costs for minor design modifications that were done during construction that were intended to enhance the safety design along the corridor or support the needs of adjacent business and property owners. Construction on the Outer Division Multimodal Safety Project began in August of 2021, and Raymore Construction was substantially complete in October of 2022. The contractor is still working along the corridor, completing some of the added scope related to this contract amendment, as well as punch list items. We hope to have all construction completed by summer of this year. And thank you. That concludes my brief presentation, and I welcome any questions from council at this time.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Commissioner Mapps and PBOT for their leadership on this project and bringing this forward. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Mapps. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Steve. This is like meat and potatoes of the transportation world. Potholes. You remember that, Commissioner Saltzman? A lot of pothole investments. Anyway, I vote aye.
Gonzalez.
Just want to appreciate Commissioner Mapp's leadership on this, certainly thinking across the bureaus and how to efficiently do these projects. It's good stewardship for the city's dollars. Also appreciate keeping the ears open to feedback from the community who may have different perspectives on transportation than those of us living inside of 82nd. With that, I vote aye.
Mapps.
I just want to thank staff for their presentation today, and I want to congratulate PBOT and BES for their collaborative work here. This is good government and a good value for the taxpayer, which is why I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I want to especially acknowledge Commissioner Mapps' comments right at the beginning. I really like the idea that you and PBOT have to go back and evaluate some of the completed projects and make sure that they actually uphold the original goal statements for those projects. I think that's terrific and shows really good leadership on all your parts. So thank you for that. Good presentation. It's easy to support this one. I vote aye and the project is approved. The ordinance is approved. Thank you for your leadership and also thanks for coming back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're sorry that we had to do that to you.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, now for the main show. Not that that wasn't important. It was. The main show for the afternoon agenda is item number 141. Please, this is a resolution.
Refer renewal of Portland Children's Levy to city voters as a local option levy for 5 years commencing in FY 2024-25.
Colleagues, I want to thank all of... Now we're going to get right into Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Ryan, go.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
I'm going to speed this up. Thank you all for your patience in letting us finish some of that. Commissioner Ryan, I'll have more remarks at the end.
Absolutely. Colleagues, it's my pleasure to bring to the council today the Portland Children's Levy Renewal. Over the last 2 years, it's been my honor to continue the great work started under the legacy leadership of Commissioner Dan Saltzman. Then it was passed on to you, Mayor Wheeler, and now with me and all of you to support this proud legacy. The Portland Children's Levy is a crucial investment in Portland's children, youth, and families. It's one piece of the puzzle on how we keep our kids, youth safe, fed, thriving, succeeding in and out of school. Let me elaborate a bit about the out of school part. Our teachers, our counselors, our staff in our school, they do amazing work. The actual bell schedule of that time is about 18% of the time in any given year. There is this term, it's called summer melt. That's when those with resources are pretty good. They're in the summer, they're engaging with programs and with enrichment. But those without resources, not so much, unless they can access affordable programs offered by our partners. As such, research reveals it is during the summer when the achievement gap widens. Sadly, as we come out of almost, please turn off your cell phones.
Okay.
Sadly, as we come out of almost 2 years of COVID shutdown and remote learning, the expanded summer melt has gone on for too long. And sadly, achievement data is revealing some somber truths. As such, now more than ever, we need to renew this investment to make up ground of the impacts of COVID in particular. Portland Children's Levy is something we can trust. The return on investment since 2002 has been outstanding. The Portland Children's Levy has been doing the work to fill in the gaps, provide wraparound services to youth and their families. And I must say, this assignment was a natural extension of the work that I was doing at All Hands Raised. And so I'm beyond impressed and satisfied with the work of the Portland Children's Levy has done, is doing, and will continue to do over the next 5 years and beyond. It's now my pleasure to introduce Lisa Pellegrino, the Executive Director of the Levy, to share more about this important program. Welcome to the dais. Welcome to the table, Lisa. It's all yours. Take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, councilors. Nice to see you all. I'm Lisa Pellegrino. I'm the director of the Children's Levy, and I'm going to just tell you a little bit about the Children's Levy, give you some information, and we're going to invite some speakers up to talk. So it's going to be kind of a mixed presentation. If you can go ahead and give me the first slide. Actually, probably even the second slide. Yeah, let's go to the second slide for the overview. So the Portland's Children's Levy, as Dan alluded, is a local option property tax measure that grew out of the need to increase opportunity for all Portland's children and youth. The levy was first passed in 2002, and it's been renewed three times since. In the 2018 renewal, 83% of the voters passed the levy. The tax rate is a little over 4 cents per $1,000 of assessed value for real property, and the levy is currently generating $23 million annually that's invested in 91 programs for children and youth across the city. As you can see highlighted in yellow there, administrative costs are limited by the ballot measure to 5%, and PCL is audited annually for compliance with that. All of our compliance audits are up on our website for anybody to review. Go to the next slide. The mission of the levy, as Commissioner Ryan alluded to, is to change the trajectory of disparities in outcomes for children and youth, particularly for children and youth of color and those experiencing poverty, by supporting community-based programs that help prepare children for school, support them to be successful in and out of school, and eliminate racial and ethnic disparities in children's outcomes. Next slide. So the levy is overseen by a 5-member allocation committee that sets policies and oversees implementation of the levy. On that committee, there is required to be a city elected official, which is Commissioner Ryan, a county commissioner, two citizens with knowledge and experience related to children's services, and a representative of the business community. City Council has to review and approve all of the allocation committee recommendations for funding, and all of the grants are made through a competitive process. The grants are monitored then by staff to assure that programs reach their intended populations and are responsive to the communities that they're serving and achieve positive outcomes for children and the parents. If you go to the next slide, just briefly review who's currently sitting on the committee. As I mentioned, the city elected official is Commissioner Dan Ryan. The county elected official is Jessica Vega Peterson, who's now the chair of Multnomah County. The two citizen representatives are Tracy Rossi and Felicia Tripp Folsom, and Mitch Hornaker represents the business community. Yeah, I'm going to pause with that overview and invite Dan Saltzman, who has been greeted by everybody, to come up and provide a little bit more history and context on the levy, since he is the person who started it at the city when he was a commissioner, and also Duncan Campbell, who is the founder of Friends of the Children, a nonprofit long-term mentoring program that's existed in this community for more than 30 years, and he's a long advocate of children. So if you all want to come up to the table.
It's always a pleasure to be back.
I'll turn it over to Dan Saltzman first.
Thank you, Lisa. Good to see you, Mr. Mayor, and the newbies on the City Council. Commissioner Mapps, Commissioner Rubio, Commissioner Gonzalez, congratulations, and Commissioner Ryan. I wanted to start by just disclosing that I serve on the board, National Board of Friends of the Children, Duncan's organization, and also the Board of Bridge Meadows, both of which are recipients of money from the Portland Children's Levy, although I'm not here on their behalf. So I want to thank Commissioner Ryan for bringing this item forward today. As Lisa mentioned, the Children's Levy was first approved in 2002, and it has since been renewed by voters three times, most recently in 2018. And it was really created on the notion that an important way to make a higher priority, or to make children a higher priority, is to ask voters to invest taxpayer dollars to expand the number of children served by nonprofit programs that are proven to make children more safe and more successful. The need to invest in evidence-based programs was a growing recognition in the early 2000s. The benefits of being rigorous about investing in outcomes and in proven programs is perhaps the levy's hallmark accomplishment. Its other hallmarks are the 5% limit on its administrative expenses, and a five-person allocation committee, which, as Lisa said, a city and county elected, two residents of the city and the county, and a member of the business community. The successful cooperative role with Multnomah County in particular is one reason why the Children's Levy has worked well for 20 years. And I also say that voters love the 5% administrative cap on expenses. I mean, who does that these days? Subsequent voter-approved ballot measures have been before voters, and they've all emulated the allocation committee notion of power sharing, but none have really contained an explicit cap on administrative expenses. They kind of dance around that. They don't say it explicitly. So I think it's important for the council to once again refer the Children's Levy to voters for another five-year extension, because the challenges children face are still there. And they need all the help we can muster to ensure they have access at school, they arrive at school ready to learn, they have access to after-school activities and to mentors, they are protected from child abuse and are free from hunger. And foster children also continue to deserve special focus for the daunting challenges each must overcome to be successful. Another important element of the Children's Levy is the flexibility of its allocation committee model. In an environment where there is endless need, the committee can direct money where the need is greatest and the resources are most scarce. The 2018 renewal passed with 83% of voters approving it. So it resulted in an investment in children of over $260 million since the inception of the levy in 2002. City councils, past and present, have adhered to its singular focus on children, and the ballot language before you today is much the same as it was in 2002. Finally, all of us know that it's good staff work that makes us look good. What makes the levy succeed is the hard work of staff. Director Lisa Pellegrino and Meg McElroy have been with the levy practically since its inception and are dedicated, hardworking subject matter experts. John Kelly ensures, among other things, that the levy meets its 5% administrative cap. And I know there's other members of the levy, but I haven't met them. But at the end of the day, the thing that matters, that makes the Portland Children's Levy strong, is the rare thing: a true partnership between voters and their government, with a clear mission, real accountability, delivering on a vital priority, the future of our children. For 20 years, that partnership has been something you can all be proud of, and I urge you to continue it. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Salzman.
Go ahead.
Duncan, you can go ahead.
Hi, I'm Duncan Campbell, and I've been a child advocate, I know you're not gonna believe this, for over 50 years. I know I look a lot younger than that, so. And I'm just passionate about the youth that you fund and the number of us in the community serve. But the greatest achievement of the Children's Levy, and the reason I strongly supported it in the very beginning, over the years, and today recommend come here to support it, is you've transformed the system of serving children. The historical model has been incarceration. And by the way, I worked for 10 years at the Donald E. Long Home in detention. And that's where I came up with the idea of later on doing Friends of the Children, by the way, because that system's too little too late. And that was the essence of the system, other than a few minor children serving programs. But what you've done by creating the Children's Levy and providing the funding for innovative programs that start younger, which is imperative, catch these youth before they end up in the juvenile justice system, let alone the adult incarceration, and with early learning centers, and the other programs that have been funded over the years are leading edge. And it's created something in our community that really doesn't exist in many communities around the country. And you should be proud of what the Children's Levy's accomplished and what it will continue to accomplish in the future. Because like Dan, I'm all about outcomes. I mean, when I serve or create something, if it didn't work, I'd call it a day and move on. But the programs that you've been funding and are going to fund are innovative programs that create real change for the children in need, the most vulnerable children in the early years, and then build on it. So they are not going to be incarcerated. They're not going to become a teen parent, and they're not going to drop out of school. And you should be proud of that work, and the city should be proud of the work. But the creation of the Children's Levy and enabling that to go forward, I just strongly, strongly recommend.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate you very much for coming, giving your time today.
Yes,
thank you.
I've worked
with both of you for a very long time, and I really appreciate your support.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
It's great to have the OGs of the Children's Levy here to kick us off.
It's reminding me of when I was much younger and had much less gray hair. Okay, you can go to the next slide. I'm going to do a few more, trying to intersperse numbers and statistics with people so that
it's easier to understand all the impacts of the levy. So I'll tell you a little bit about the programs and grantees that the levy is supporting, just to give you a sense for that before we have some more guests come up and speak. You can go to the next slide. So as we mentioned before, PCL is currently supporting 91 programs for children age birth through 24 in 6 program areas. And those include, as Duncan mentioned, early childhood, child abuse prevention and intervention, foster youth, after school, mentoring, and hunger relief. These programs provide a range of services based on the top priority needs that are identified through community engagement that we do before we let the grants. The list that you see on the slide is some examples of the types of services funded. It's not exhaustive. If you want to see all the types of services funded, I recommend you go to the website. So services include things like home visiting for young children and their parents, therapeutic classrooms and respite care for stressed families, after school and tutoring and enrichment, caring adult mentors, such as are provided through Friends of the Children, college and career transition support for foster youth, and daily access to nutritious food. You can go to the next slide. So those 91 programs are offered by 45 community-based agencies. They're both large and small. I've included a list of some of those on the slide. That's 9 of the 45 organizations. Again, by no means an exhaustive list. So includes organizations like the Ethiopian Eritrean Cultural Resource Center, Elevate Oregon, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, Latino Network, LifeWorks Northwest, Metropolitan Family Service, the Native American Youth and Family Center, and Self-Enhancement, Inc. And I would imagine many of you are familiar with those agencies in the community. The PCL-funded programs at those agencies support 750 jobs, and many of the agencies provide first employment experiences for parents and youth that were once participants in the programs. So you see a lot that comes full circle. Next slide, please. So I know this is a little small and a little hard to read, but that's a pie chart that shows how the funds are invested by program area. So there's both dollars and percentage of total revenues, and this is for 22-23, so this is the current fiscal year. The levy has historically invested heavily in early childhood programs, as you can see from that pie chart, both because we know that investing early is important and yields really the best outcomes, and also because early childhood programs are often more expensive to deliver because ratios are smaller for younger children. So that just gives you a sense for why that piece of the pie is larger. All right, I'm going to pause there. I know we've been hearing the lovely sounds of a small child in the background, and I'm going to invite the team from LifeWorks Northwest Children's Relief Nursery to come up and speak and ask for you to welcome Leslie Brown, who's the program director at the Children's Relief Nursery. And I'm going to get up out of my chair after I introduce them. Diana Camacho Cortez, who's the teacher and home visitor with the nursery, and Magali Leon and her child Mia, who are participants. So I'll get out of the chairs and you all can take the seats. Leslie, I'll let you introduce folks.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leslie Brown. I'm the program director of the Children's Relief Nursery. We're a program of LifeWorks Northwest. And I'm going to just tell you a little bit about our program, and then Deanna will talk, and then Magali will talk. So. We've been really looking forward to this opportunity. You know, our program serves the youngest of the young in North Portland in St. John's. And we serve about 92 children a year, 72 families. And we are a child abuse and neglect prevention program for families and children really birth through 4. So very young. We even take some moms into the program who are in their third trimester of pregnancy. So, and we provide therapeutic classrooms, respite care, home visiting is the required part of our program, and frequent home visiting. For infants, we're home visiting weekly, and for the rest of the families, twice a month. And on home visits, we do a lot of parent education about early childhood development, but also helping families reduce stressors. So to qualify for our program, families have to have at least 5 stressors. Most have in anywhere between 5 to over 20. We call them risk factors or family stressors, and we're really working to reduce those. We are showing pretty good outcomes. So I think last year we had 81 percent of our families show a reduction in stress and risk. And we had about that many also show improvements just in resilience and in some of those prevention factors that we try to build in. And so there are about 33 relief nurseries in Oregon, and we're just one of them. So we're within a whole network, and we're really fairly proud. We've been about for our staff, because our staff have been through the Oregon Association of Relief Nurseries becoming endorsed in a special niche called infant toddler mental health endorsement. And so all of our staff are called early childhood specialists, and they're endorsed in this niche of specialty and expertise that they have. And so I'd like to introduce one of our wonderful staff. Her name's Deanna Camacho, and she has added a lot to our program and is a fantastic member of our team. So Deanna, why don't you just talk about what you do?
Thank you, Leslie. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon. My name is Deanna Camacho Cortez, and I am here on behalf of the Children's Relief Nursery. For the past 2.5 years, I have worked at CRN as the Wobbler and Toddler teacher and provide classroom services to these children ranging in age from 15 months at the earliest to 3 years. As Leslie mentioned, I am one of the early childhood education specialists there and provide home visiting services as well as classroom services, and with my co-teacher provide parenting classes at Project Network. And today I'm here to introduce one of the families that attends RCRN classroom services and I home visit with bi-weekly, Magali Leon and Mia.
Hi, I'm Magali and this is my daughter Mia. I would say that Mia obviously attends the Children's Relief Nursery, and honestly, the growth that I've seen from her is like inexplainable. She was a really shy kid when she first started going, and now she's like everywhere. She loves to have her friends there. She said she visits us bi-weekly, and one of the things that they are always telling me is like, if you need any kind of help, you just come to us. And I recently lost my job, and so I always think about like asking you guys for diapers and that kind of stuff.
It's okay.
And like my family works 12 hours, so I don't have a lot of support with her. And so like being able to take her there, know that she's gonna be there safely, and she gets to eat with them and eat as much as she wants. She's a big eater, as you guys can tell. it's honestly really so much stress, to be able to have my own time and take care of myself throughout that time, because I don't know if any of you guys have children, but you guys know it is hard. It's hard to get your own time. Mm-hmm. So I honestly so grateful for you guys. Sorry.
You did a wonderful job, and we really appreciate you braving the parking and trying to figure out how to pay for it and getting here. It was a lot, and Mia just woke up from a nap, and it was stressful, did it because you wanted to give back.
Exactly.
And I tell you, we want to thank you, feel a lot of gratitude from the bottom of our heart, very much so.
I didn't know about this program at all. So her little cousin, who actually moved across the country to Georgia, her and her brother went there. And so when you hear something from people that you know, and they're like, they're getting speech therapy, and because he's having trouble. And I was like, speech therapy? I was like, how much are you paying for this? Because you're dropping your kids off, and you guys in daycare is expensive. And I was like, how much are you paying for this? It's completely free. And so that's how we got into the program from family. Hey, Mia, we're not going to touch that, okay?
She wants to talk.
It's like my turn.
She's very curious. You want to say hi? You want to say something?
Maybe.
So that's how we found out about the program. So my own family has also been through this, and they've, felt safe dropping off the kids and being there for a couple of hours, couple of days of the week. And Mia, like I said, when she first started going there, she was really shy. She didn't get dropped off anywhere else, really, other than at her aunt's, which she knows. And the first day when I, she just completely left my arms and was like, all right, you know, I'm leaving. And so, yeah. And so she comes back and she'll tell me, and I'm like, what did you do today? Oh, snack. I'm like, oh, you ate a snack. And she played with friends and she'll play with blocks so she can put little sentences together. And I think that is thanks to you guys that she can talk and she is active. Thanks to them, I would say that her development is definitely, obviously I am her mom, I spend the most time with her, but I have to give you guys credit for all of those kids that you guys have and the patience and the love that they show, not only the kids, but the families as well, like coming home bi-weekly and, you know, talking about their growth and, you know, saying like, oh, you know, I can point out that she's ready to do this. And so, you know what, we'll start practicing at home. So Mia was at home not really interested in the potty. And so she sees other kids that go there and they go to the potty. And so she's like, oh, you know, I want to go potty. And so she'll embarrass me sometimes at the store. She's like, mommy, potty. And I'm like, yeah, that is what you used to go potty. Mama, yes, that is. And that is a big thank you to you guys. That all of that is because of you, where you're the teacher. And they just have so much patience with her and with me as well. Whenever I have any questions, this is my first child. I am only 21 years old, and yeah, it takes a village, and they are definitely my village. So thank you.
Thank you. Nice job.
Yeah, thank you. Nice job.
All right. Do you have any questions for us? Or?
Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to thank you for testifying today. My wife was a bilingual specialist at a children's relief nursery earlier in her career, and I so appreciate what you do for young families and for children at these key milestones for development. So I think your work is beautiful, and thank you so much for testifying.
You're welcome. You can tell that Mia's thriving, doing really well. And we love it that the teacher and the home visitor are the same person. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a relationship-based program, and we build strong relationships, and we adore our families.
Thank you. Yeah, Mia's definitely ready for the mic.
Yeah, she is. She's ready for the spotlight.
Yeah. Leslie, now this location is right next to James John Elementary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think that's really splendid too, that you have that on-ramp into the full-day kindergarten.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good location. You should come by and take a tour. I'll give you a tour.
I've been there a couple times, but it's been a while.
Have you? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Lisa, who's up next?
Thank you, Mia.
Bye.
She needs a mic.
Nice job. Let's go, Mama.
She is no longer shy. Yeah.
She warmed up.
She's natural gravitation to the microphone.
Yeah.
I think you can see why we all do this work and why I've been with it for so long. So that's exactly the stories I read all the time. Okay, why don't you take it to the next slide, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the populations that are served at the Children's Lowy programs. So you got to hear from one, but this is looking across all the programs. Okay, you can take to the next slide. So we're serving the programs are serving an average of 10,000 children and youth per year in the early childhood, child abuse, foster care, after school and mentoring programs. So that's basically the not hunger relief programs. And you can see there of approximately 10,000 children per year that are served, 75 to 80% identify as Black, Indigenous, or child or youth of color. 35 to 40% live or go to school in East Portland, and 40 to 45% come from homes where the primary language is not English. So that data is based on, the ranges are based on data coming from 2018 through 2022, so about a four-year period. That's why there's some variance there. It varies year to year somewhat. And then last, hunger relief services are serving 12 to 17,000 children per year. There's a big range there, partly due to the pandemic, because we're looking at a four-year period, and the pandemic really sent food insecurity through the roof, and programs served many more children and families than they have typically served. I would say in most years it's 12,000-ish. But the pandemic really increased that. So if you want to go to the next slide, it gives you just a little bit more detail. So this data is from 21-22, and it just shows you the race ethnicity identifications of that approximately 10,000 children who were served in that year. And as you can see, it's very diverse. That's where we get the stats, 75 to 80% of the folks or the children served are identify as Black, Indigenous, or a person of color. Okay, you can take it to the next slide. So this is another pie chart showing you the languages of the people, the children that were served. And you can, all the languages that are listed there, but small, those are the languages that the City Office of Equity and Human Rights asks that we collect data on, report to you. And also you can see there's quite a big pie for other languages. That almost 10% piece of the pie represents more than 50 additional languages that people report speaking in their home. So it's an incredibly diverse group of children and significantly immigrant and refugees communities that are served. And with that, I'll pause again for a second, and I'm gonna invite a team from the immigrant and refugee community organization to come to the table and speak about ERCO Inspire. They have an Inspire program, which is an after-school program, and I will let them tell you about what that program does. We have, I know, Pao Tong, the program coordinator for Inspire, and Susan Lam, the youth and family advocate, Molly Armentrout, the program assistant, and Grace Nguyen, who's a student participating in the program. There's three chairs. I'm not sure if everybody can fit up here, but whoever can, I will scoot out of the chair.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Mayor, Mr. Mayor, City Commissioner, and staff. For the record, my name is Pao Khan Tong, and I came to the United States about 10 years ago as a refugee. I'm working right now at ARCO as an Inspire coordinator. I've been working in ARCO about 3 years, 2 years as a youth advocate, and nearly 1 year now as a coordinator. I come here as a refugee, and I belong to the a country from Myanmar, and I belong to the Zomi community. And here today, I have our program assistant, Molly Amantrao, and here one of our wonderful students from our program, Grace Nguyen, and I will let them introduce.
For the record, my name is Molly Armentrout. Hello, nice to meet you all. I am the program assistant, and I come from the Asian American community.
For the record, my name is Grace Nguyen, a student from Roseway Heights Middle School. I'm in seventh grade, and a fun fact about me is that I love cooking, and my favorite dish to make is homemade lobster sushi rolls.
Wow. Yes, our team, the Inspire team, represent a lot of ethnic group, eight ethnic group to be exact in our staff. Our staff come from Latinx, Somali, Vietnamese, Slavic, Karen, Greater Middle Eastern, Bhutanese, and Tongan communities. And we are all very passionate about serving our students so that they are successful, not only in the American education system, but also the greater American society as well. And currently we're serving second to eighth graders, and about 150 students are enrolling in our programs. And they are coming from a lot of diverse community as well. They come from Vietnamese, Burmese, Karen, Rohingyas, Nepali, Bhutanese, Somali, and the Slavic community. And we also have Middle Eastern communities and Pacific Islander communities as well. Currently, we are providing our services in David Douglas School and School District and the Portland Public School District.
The main supports that Inspire provides are culturally specific academic advising for students, family engagement, and client assistance, so that our families receive holistic support for their children's education and well-being. Students and parents receive support in navigating the American school system. The focus on supporting early education in elementary and middle school is foundational for student growth and success later in high school and post-graduation. Our hope is that the Inspire program provides students with culturally specific academic advocacy so they can thrive socially and academically. There are many challenges for immigrant and refugee students when it comes to navigating their identity in America. Oftentimes, it feels like they are being pulled in different directions with various expectations and responsibilities. We hope that our staff, who hold lots of lived experience as well as hybrid identities, can become positive role models for the youth that we serve. And now I'll let Grace give her testimony and talk a little bit more about the Inspire program.
I am grateful to have the opportunity to present my testimony on behalf of all the students a part of the Inspire program to all of you today. First, it would be a lie if I was looking forward to joining this program initially, since my mom made me sign up. Along with the heavy school homework schedule and a sports extracurricular like basketball, I wasn't convinced that this program would not be any more stressful to add. Unexpectedly, though, this program has made me feel so much more connected to my Vietnamese heritage, and I believe that my peers feel the same way as I do. See, I feel so much more involved in a community that I can relate to as a second generation Vietnamese American, as this community accepts diversity in different ways. Now, being surrounded by other Vietnamese students in the classroom validates my experience, as well as everyone else's experience living in an Asian household. In this space, we are encouraged to engage in cultural specific experiences. Additionally, the after school period with Inspire has allowed me to have a designated time to relax or be productive despite my busy and unpredictable schedule. It allows a specific time to get homework done with the help of instructors or my friends around. On days where I do not have homework, there are activities available to help me wind down after a long, busy day at school. Whew. As I am speaking on behalf of my fellow students at this program, I recognize that some of us come from difficult or complicated situations. This program is a safe haven for all of us, largely because of the staff that runs it. As a result, we have the opportunity to cultivate brighter and healthier minds. Now, coming up next is a personal short story. What? Anyways, during the after-school period with Inspire, last Thursday has made me really evaluate how it affects me at the end of my day. See, when I walked to my car that was always waiting for me, my mom was there, and she usually had always asked me how my day was. And this time, I actually got to think about it instead of with an immediate response, like, it was okay, Mom. And I knew that it was a simple fact that no matter how my day started at school, I would always come home at ease. And I would always start preparing to start binging my favorite show with no worries at all. And now, after witnessing the dedication, kindness, and passion that the staff and the students have shown me, I am proud to say that this program has helped me become a better student, a better friend, and a better person overall. Again, thank you for giving me your time and attention for this testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for giving us the time and to provide our testimony and to showcase the work that we do. We and our families and our youth are really grateful for the Portland Children's Levy to continue to support us years after years, and to support our essential programs for our immigrants and refugee youth and families. So thank you so much.
Oh, we all know where dinner is tonight, right?
There you go. Homemade sushi rolls, maybe, huh?
Sounds good. I'm hungry.
Yes, I'll have to give a shout out to Lynn Tan, who was one of the first coordinators for that program and is still at ERCO today. So it's been a program that the Levy's funded for a long while and has continued to really support immigrant refugee youth and as those communities have changed over time. All right, back to a few more stats. Can you give me the next slide, please, on outcomes? Actually, you can go ahead to the next one. So as former Commissioner Dan Saltzman stressed, we definitely track participant outcomes at the Levy based on the services that are provided. And here we'll show some data on programs that are tracking the same or similar outcomes in a program area. So they're divided up by program areas, you can see is listed on the slide. So in early childhood, we had 87% of the children meeting expected developmental milestones and 91% of the children who were not on track getting referred for additional help. 97% of parents and caregivers meeting parenting goals. Parenting goals are a big part, as you heard this morning, of early childhood and child abuse prevention programs. In child abuse prevention and intervention, we had 86% of parents meeting parenting practice goals and reporting increased safety and stability, which is key for stressed families. Next slide. And in the remaining program areas, foster care, we had 96% of youth meeting academic goals and 100% of youth meeting positive youth development goals. And after school, 95% of youth meeting youth development outcomes, and mentoring, 97% meeting school engagement outcomes. And in small grants, which have focused on after school and mentoring services, 92% meeting academic goals. So the facts and the data on outcomes provide information on program impact for sure, but it's also important to remember what's behind the numbers. And as you've heard some today, you're getting a little piece, a little view into what's behind some of the outcomes. I wanted to welcome the team from Elevate Oregon, which I believe is planning to appear virtually. So this is Donnell Morgan is the executive director of Elevate Oregon, and he's got three high school students with him, Demetrius Peyton Rivas, Donnie Crawford, and Kuveri Davis. Let's see, can we see them?
They're waving.
They're waiting. Okay, they're waiting. All right, so I can't see them. I guess it's just where I am and what I can see.
Before you go on,
you can see them. So I will turn the podium over to them. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thanks for the compliment.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Ryan, geez almighty, where's my head?
I just want to acknowledge the small grants at 92% youth met academic goals, and that took place during COVID. And if you look at the data during COVID, that's definitely beating the odds.
Yes, and just to be clear, this was last year. This is from 21-22. So outcomes are measured annually.
Are we at Parkhurst
okay, I will,
High School
yes,
now?
Go ahead. I will.
Are the Broncos
quiet.
In the house? Is that where they are?
No, they're online and ready to go, I think.
That's what I mean. Were they at Parkrose?
Yes, they are in Parkrose.
Yeah. All right, Broncos, you're on.
Hi, that's right. Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. This is a great opportunity. I've met with the mayor before in the past, and we talked a little bit about gang violence and things of that nature. So this is a great opportunity for me to again to really express the importance of this work. These three young men that are sitting next to me, I've been knowing these guys since the sixth grade. And we're a youth mentoring organization in the Park Rose school system in the district. And I have an MOU with the Park Rose School District, and we actually have a classroom, which makes us very, very unique. These young men have been in the educational system in Park Rose since first grade. And when they arrived in sixth grade, they came into this special classroom called Elevate Oregon. And I'll let them talk a little bit about what goes on in that classroom, but just to see where they've come from, where they've gone, and where they're going through positive mentorship, having positive people in their lives. And we're really making a push to really get rid of all that violence, put these young men and women of color on a trajectory and change their lives, and not only their lives, but their siblings, their families, and the students of Park Rose that's going to follow them. And I'm just very proud of their success. And when I was given this opportunity today, these are the three young men that I thought about exactly, who needs to be in front of you all to talk about what Elevate Oregon has done for them. And just let them speak a little bit about their experience. And they're a little nervous, but they've done this several times, and I know they're going to do a great job. So whoever wants to jump in first, say your name. And
so my name is Kavari Davis. I'm a senior at Park Rose High School. I've been with Elevate since sixth grade year. Fifth grade year, Donnell came over to my elementary school and talked to us a little bit about it and what was going on. I would say I'm lying if I would say I was like, oh, Elevate Oregon, I want to join. But he really talked about field trips, and which really got me. So young kid, not really so good in school, but I was like, field trips sound fun. So I joined in sixth grade year, and getting to the classroom, you don't really talk about what you usually talk about in school. Really, it's really like a family built in that classroom. people that look like me, you know, was a good thing, especially in Portland, you know. So that was fun. Elevate just really like helped me like with opportunities like I couldn't even imagine as a young kid. Like I'm doing right now, I'm talking to y'all that I never thought I would ever meet in my life. So the opportunities on Elevate has really just been a blessing to be in Elevate for.
My name is Demetrius. I go by DJ. I'm also a senior. I'll just say they help you go for your career path. And it's just like, for me, I want to be a veterinarian. And that is something I've always wanted to be since I was little. And just recently, I was able to get into the OSU's vet program over the summer, thanks to Elevate. So, and then they taught me, I was stayed at OSU for a week, and they taught me everything I need to know and what I'm going to have to prepare for myself and all that. So I was really appreciative of that, because that's just one step closer to me reaching my goal. And then recently I also got accepted to OSU. So I'm going to go there in order to pursue my goal and try to get into their vet program as I go. And then I just like, it's just, they're really there for you in ways you can't really imagine. It's like, they do all the little things throughout the day, and just, you're really connected to everyone that's there. And it's really a family that you could just like talk to. And it's just like, for us, our class is at the end of the day. So it's just like, it's relaxing and we get to chill, but we also get to learn, but it's stuff that we want to learn in order to like, for us to understand what, how it's going to be as when we get adults and what we're going to need to know and all the things that that would better us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Donnie Crawford. And similar to what my peers were saying, I started Elevate in sixth grade, and we are now seniors. And Elevate, similar to what they said, Elevate is like a family. They push you to achieve your personal goals, and Elevate just is there to expand your options, and they give you so many opportunities. And I'm really grateful for Elevate, because without Elevate, I don't think I would be as engaged in school. I don't know. It really just seems like it's a second family, honestly. All the mentors and all the staff members within Elevate, and even my classmates, we are really connected. And I really like Elevate.
I would say in closing, supporting the levy has been instrumental. We took a group of middle school kids, seventh graders last year, they're eighth graders this year. So there's about 15 of them. And they spent a week at Oregon State University with a partnership that I have there. And they stood in the dorms. They got to live a college life. They got to see what it's like. And I think for African-American kids and kids of color, we don't get those opportunities unless it's through athletics or when you're a senior, when you're trying to figure out what you're trying to do. So by funding us and giving us this opportunity, we're able to expand these young men's options and young women's options earlier, put them on a trajectory earlier. They can see it, they can touch it, they can dream it, and ultimately they can achieve it. So thank you for your time. And again, we're very appreciative of being funded and getting this opportunity to share a little bit about who we are and what we do.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Donnell. I really appreciate you all giving up your time and being present for today. It was really impactful. And I really appreciated hearing how much you focus on opportunity, because that is absolutely the goal.
Thank you.
I just want to tell a little tiny story. So this came from a program in Colorado. I can't remember the name right now. Do you remember, Duncan?
Colorado Uplift.
Colorado Uplift, right. And they were coming to me to Bertha here in Portland. And I reached out to Superintendent Karen Gray at Park Rose, because Park Rose had nothing in terms of programs like this. So it's just personally really gratifying to see how it's grown under your leadership. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, we had one more invited guest to speak, Mark Jackson. I'm not sure if he was successful in getting a link and is able to appear. Is he there? Okay. Then I'm going to hand out. So Mark Jackson is the executive director at REAP. REAP focuses on leadership development and civic engagement and academic support for youth. And the programs that we're funding there are mostly in East Portland. So I'll let Mark talk further and take it away.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, also Mayor and all the other commissioners. Certainly excited about the opportunity to share about just the impact of the levy funding. And I've been privileged to be a part of this process since its genesis. So a lot of actual history and context, not just as a grantee, but just as an actual child advocate for services, especially on the east side of town. Utilize these funds to support programming both in David Douglas and also Centennial School District. And we know the disparities that have been impacting East Portland residents. So I'm so thankful for the funding. We're hoping to have some students on, but because of the actual age level we serve, they're unavailable. But I will call out some high points behind this work. We know that with COVID-19 in the school settings, we are supporting a whole new type of student. Okay. It's not just content instruction delivery, but also providing those essential supports around social emotional learning and really around affirming students to just to celebrate their resilience. And I think one thing we can kind of share with our programming is students feel supported, the parents feel supported. REAP has really done a great job just navigating just the range of rapid change during the COVID time. And we just appreciate Director Pellegrino's leadership during COVID to work with grantees to be fluid in our direct services. So shout out to her. But I'm proud to say that one of our examples is Alice Ott Middle School, where we had our students form structure around just government. So we actually have a government model that mirrors our United States of America. We have executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch to really elevate student voice, both in the school environments, but also in the community. We have district family nights within these districts to really allow students to facilitate parent engagement opportunities in the evening time with our staff and our school partners to really elevate what REAP does on a consistent basis. And it's always a joy to see our students engage with their parents and also with the educators to kind of highlight what REAP is doing for them as students. If you follow REAP on social media, you'll see some real exciting reels of parent engaging our students doing interactive activities, really celebrating resilience. You know, I think that there's so much going on. It's important to pause and just appreciate each other. And you'll see that type of sentiment in the actual video reels on social media. I'll also call out that REAP has been working with students to elevate them, not just in terms of community engagement and parent engagement, but we also are really kind of, I believe, developing future civic leaders. REAP has been hosting what we call the Oregon United Summit for several years now, and most recently over the winter break, convening students from across the state, and these include students that we serve with the levy funds, to introduce legislation, Senate Bill 421, that will actually create into law a statewide youth collaborative that will inform ODE and the governor on what students' needs are, specifically students of color. And I think with the funding of the levy allows us to not just provide day-to-day direct service, social emotional supports, leadership capacity, but giving students a voice in the legislative a space to really kind of inform and shape policy that improves the lives for them and generations to come. And Senator Michael Dimbrough is championing this legislation. We believe it'll be passing in this session. And these are just multiplying, I think, stories of how the levy funds are really attracting additional dollars to bring not just community change in Portland, but just statewide change. REAP has also worked with our district partners around student voice in terms of addressing gun violence, working with African community members around East Portland and just the myths around the reality of gun violence in the African community. So we've worked in partnership with Portland Parks and East Portland Community Center, hosting events and convenings to address the issue of gun violence, to allow students to hear from mental health clinicians, community members, to affirm their safety and give them access to resources, food boxes, gift cards, a whole range of things during those challenging times of the holidays. So these are things that we do as an organization. So it's multi-tiered, I think, services that supports the students, engages the community, also influencing policy so students feel heard, validated, and also appreciated. So when you talk about a city council vote, you know, this is a call, a seminal moment, if you will, where I think that the taxpayers have seen the historic value and impact of levy dollars. And I think now more than ever, we need this to continue to be in a position as a city, as community partners, to ensure we love on our young people, to ensure that they're safe, they're affirmed, and they have opportunity and access to thrive as our future leaders. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate you all's vote.
Thanks so much, Mark. You've been an unfailing voice for Youth Voice in the 20 years that I've known you. I appreciate that you highlighted that. Okay, I have a few more slides and then we'll wrap up. Go to the next slide on community engagement. You can skip one more down, thank you. So before the 1920 competitive grant process, we worked with Empress Rules Equity Consulting to engage community members that were most affected by disparities in outcomes. And their recommendations really focused on equity, that we fund culturally relevant and responsive programs provided by staff who reflect the culture and speak the languages of those who they serve and who include families and youth in program planning and evaluation. Empress Rules also recommended that we create a small grants fund, so smaller grants, smaller organizations would have easier access to levy funding, and that we ought create a community advisory board to provide ongoing community input on PCL policy and funding. So in response to that feedback, we have done those things and created a small grants fund, and Elevate, who just presented to you all on their program, was one of the small grants recipients. And we also created a 12-member community council to advise on broader community engagement practice and policy and funding. And that group has just started, had their first meeting last week. The 12 volunteers that are on that community council represent a range of experience, you know, both work experience, personal experience, lived experience in communities that experience disparities, including Black, Indigenous, and communities of color, LGBTQIA communities, children and youth with disabilities, houseless families, and families experiencing poverty and food insecurity. So we're really looking forward to working with that group and having them advise us moving forward. Next slide, please. So a little bit on finance as we wrap up. You can go to the next slide. So this slide shows a brief history for the last four fiscal years on PCL revenues that are generated by the tax. So that's in the column under revenue, the amounts that were granted out in those years, the total number of grants, and the percentage of administrative expenses for those fiscal years that are that the auditors find. Those are in the audit reports. Okay, next slide, and I'll explain a little bit about some of the numbers here. Yes, so this is the words, and we can always toggle back to the numbers. As you saw in that previous slide, revenues expenses vary annually, and the amounts granted in an annual period don't always match the revenues for that same period. And that's a result of basically the grant funding process. So before a competitive funding round where they were going to give grants that are multi-year grants, so they last for at least 3 years, we use the city economists' projections of what the likely revenues are to decide how much you can grant out in that funding round. So sometimes revenues exceed projections. So we based the grants that we gave based on the revenues we thought we would have, but sometimes luck is better and more revenues are collected. So when that happens, we get fund balance that accrues. There's also a fund balance that can accrue when grant contracts are not fully spent out. And that sometimes all grant contracts are paid on a reimbursement basis based on actual expenses incurred. So sometimes if there are staff vacancies, which has been a problem during the pandemic, you will get grants that don't spend out in an annual period. So that all creates fund balance. Before the 2019 funding round, the committee made the decision to take all of the fund balance that had accrued at that point, which was at that point mostly due to revenues exceeding projected amounts, and allocate those in addition to the future revenues in that funding round. So they were spread out, that fund balance was spread out over time to be allocated in that grant period. we try to spread the funds equally over periods of years based on feedback that we've received for many years from both agencies, service providing agencies, and grant and community members, to try to keep funding levels relatively consistent so we stabilize agencies so they can continue to provide services, and that we don't abruptly stop services because money is gone, so people lose the services they're receiving. So we're doing our best to try to level that out and make sure that folks have access to consistent funding. So over the, we have had basically been spending down that fund balance that that you can see. We can go back to the, you want to go back to the previous slide? That might make it easier to see. When we made the grants in 2019, you can see that the amounts allocated go up for the 2021 and 21-22, which is from that funding round. So the number of grants increase and the amounts allocated go up as we're allocating out both the existing revenues plus the fund balance in those 2 years. The pandemic did impact the rate at which fund balance is getting spent down a little bit, just because staffing has been a big challenge, which I'm sure many of you are aware of in this hiring environment. So the balance has declined a little bit more slowly than anticipated, but it is declining. Okay, you can go to the next slide. The long-term outlook, two slides because we are going backwards. The long-term outlook on the five-year outlook is generally, so far as we're hearing from the city economist thus far, is positive. We expect to have sufficient revenues to maintain a consistent level of funding to meet our current grant commitments plus renewals over the next 2 years, and also to be able to continue investing a similar level of money in the community if this levy is renewed by the voters, if you choose to refer. Okay, last slide. And I'll wrap up by just saying that, as you've heard from the folks, and specifically Mark most recently, the effects of the pandemic have fallen very heavily on children and families and youth in our community, and disproportionately on people in marginalized communities. Children and youth have really struggled to maintain academic achievement when school was locked down, and school attendance, social skills, social connection even, and mental health have all been really big challenges. Increased houselessness and community violence, as you've heard too from folks, have added further stress to children and families. So as we continue to work on solving problems that the pandemic has given us, now more than ever, we need to invest in children and youth and help them recover from this. So I really urge you to vote, to refer this to voters at the May election. That's it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, colleagues. At this point, are there any questions? Do we have public testimony? We don't, do we?
No one signed up.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions at this particular juncture? Please go for it.
Thank you for the comprehensive presentation. Looking at the history of the children's levy that predated universal pre-K in Multnomah County, and as you look to the future for how the levy might be positioned going forward, do you see a mix potentially changing in terms of the allocation of dollars between, just on the age spectrum, giving some funding sources now for, universal pre-K that didn't exist when the levy was adopted? And in your last slide, we have some real challenges post-pandemic, a lot of children lacking social emotional development during the pandemic, and some real education gaps. So I'm just sort of curious what you envision going forward relative to the past as to how you might allocate dollars.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine that won't affect it, because we do fund preschool slots currently. And I imagine that with the county moving into that area, and they've been gradually ramping up their preschool slots, and it does depend. They depend on workforce and also sites to deliver services. I expect that likely we will not be funding preschool in the future. That's my projection. And the county will continue funding that since they're
Lisa, let me add a bit. Since I've been in fluid dialogue with Chair Vega Peterson about this question, and she's working with the partners in that space, and we are looking at how we can thoughtfully reallocate more up to the, the mentor years and the youth years. But it's nothing, it's a ramp up process, and she's in active dialogue with people in that space. So Chair Vega Peterson is all over that question too. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
And as you know, there are services that are not preschool that young children get. So there's a lot of home visiting services we fund for children 0 to 3 that we would still be funding.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I want to thank everyone for their presentations today. This is an impressive program. Really glad to refer it to the voters. I have a couple of very technical questions, which I suspect we might not be able to answer today, but on the off chance we have someone in the room who could brief us on this, I'll throw them out there. Do you know how we expect compression to impact this next chapter of the levy?
I mean, the revenue forecast that The Economist gives me takes into account compression. Okay. So the numbers that we've looked at, we look like to be able to sustain investment over time.
Okay.
The current level of investment includes compression.
Right.
So we do get some a small amount of revenue from the parks levy because that added additional compression for us. So they reimburse us for the effects of that additional compression. It's maybe $350,000 a year or so, something like that.
Great. I'm glad you mentioned that. My second question was, and this is probably something we should punt to our budget discussions, which are looming in about a month. I'd love to get a briefing about the interaction between the children's levy and the parks levy. I think you referenced how they support each other. I'm not sure if I completely understand all the mechanics around that. So I'd love, it would be great if we could learn more about that. I think that's more of a budget question as opposed to a referral question.
Okay.
Great.
And listen, that's also an impact question because really budgets are about having impact. So the great news, and Christian Rubio knows this very well, is the parks are the staging ground for much of children's levy activities. They really enhance one another. And so we'll give you some specific examples of that. But I've always been impressed in our allocation committee meetings where we often have that overlap between the services of the parks and of the children's levy and how they leverage and actually get greater impact.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Any further comments, questions? Thank you all for the great presentations.
Thank
this
you
is
all.
Resolution, please call the roll.
Rubio.
So I want to thank Director Pellegrino for her presentation, as well as Dan and Duncan for being here today. And all of our guests who did an excellent job of sharing their experiences. As a former director of a nonprofit that's also been a recipient of levy funds, I feel like I can talk a little bit about this. I've witnessed the real life impacts that these investments do make, and I'm a huge supporter of the children's levy. But for the levy, I know that our nonprofit wouldn't have had the ability to scale our culturally specific learning, early learning programs, and then eventually after school programs to serve more children in need across the city. And I also can say and personally attest to the fact that the levy staff are very rigorous in assessing organizational capacity and outcomes data, so voters can really be assured that these investments are thoughtfully made in trusted, proven organizations with strong outcomes. I also want to lift up how responsive the levy was during the pandemic. They were able to support 45 organizations on the front lines and thereby assuring that parents and caregivers and youth had the necessary resources and especially hunger relief, which was a big issue in the community during this time. And finally, I want to appreciate all of the funded nonprofits and their workers who are doing all this work. I want you all to know that we see you and appreciate the dedication and their advocacy and putting their hearts into the community every day. So, lastly, and thanks to former Commissioner Saltzman for all those years ago recognizing the need for the levy and taking action on it. It's really made truly a difference in the community, and how wonderful to see the legacy that you've left this community. So thank you. So I'm happy to vote aye.
Ryan.
Yeah, first, my sincere gratitude to all the children. Mia was the star of the show, obviously. Who's ready for a microphone, Grace from Roseway Heights, and the youth at Park Rose Elevate program, and the adults and the mentors who took time out of their busy schedules today to share their stories and experiences. And for the students, I really want to acknowledge your civics duty that you played today. That is life curriculum. And if I can be of any help to get you any credit at school, let me know. Director Pellegrino, Executive Director Pellegrino, the staff at the levy, you're so dogged about the oversight. You are rigorous. I remember being a recipient myself, and a lot of questions are asked. A lot of details must be provided to make sure that you're able to get a renewal of those funds. And that accountability was something that Commissioner Saltzman made sure was a part of the system. And we're grateful for that. I also want to just acknowledge your entire team that have been part of this. To my fellow members of the Allocation Committee, Chair Vega Peterson, Tracy Rossi, Felicia Tripp Folsom, and Mitch Hornaker. It's just awesome serving with all of you. We have really great meetings. We are all, I think, pretty curious people, so they probably go over a little bit longer than the staff intends, and it's because we've actually had a chance to really have engagement. And that was especially noted, which Commissioner Rubio noted, during the pandemic, and just how many were suffering from isolation and how important it was to have these extra investments. The data is grim in many ways right now, but imagine what it would have been without the children's levy during that time of shutdown and some isolation. And I also want to acknowledge two members of my staff who've been very instrumental the past couple of years, Darian Jones and Jill Swade, who's in the audience right now. Thank you, you're the best, and it's really great to have a team focused on this project. As you heard today from our founders, I'm going to call you the founders, Commissioner Dan Saltzman, and one of my mentors, although he's younger than me, Duncan Campbell, for being here today. It really means a lot. We're on your shoulders. And this levy is valuable and ongoing. And as Commissioner Rubio said, it's one heck of a legacy to have. So with this track record of operating in alignment with the city's diversity and values, this powerful work was made possible by the levy is something that all Portland voters have told us time and time again it's worth the investment. So thank you, voters and taxpayers. I urge you to vote yes on the levy renewal. A vote to renew is a vote for Portland's children, youth, and families, and it's definitely a vote for our future. The importance of the renewal of the Portland's children levy cannot be overstated. It supports children, as we heard, experiencing poverty, homelessness, abuse, neglect, and other serious challenges. Without the levy, many of our children and youth would be left without the support and resources they need to thrive. The programs and services that the levy funds are not just feel-good initiatives. They are investments in our children's future. Children who receive support and resources early in life are more likely to grow up healthy, educated, and productive members of society. I think the story from the young man at Park Rose, who's hopefully he's going on to Oregon State to become a veterinarian. The fact that he's been in a program since sixth grade, and they all said it was like a family. I think that testimony said that all. This truly is our long-term economic plan. These are the upstream investments we need. When we target investments in children, youth, and families, whom we have often failed in past generations, we're putting actual teeth into equity. From birth to career, our goal is by age 25, a person raised in our community is actually economically mobile. They are set to be the first in their family to graduate from high school, college, the trades, the first in their family to own a business, own a home. This is an investment to actually build generational wealth. Our children and youth are our future, and we must do everything we can, especially this critical time as we come out of COVID shutdown and isolation, to ignite such necessary investments and ensure that our children and youth have the support and resources they need. Today would be my mother's 97th birthday. She passed away at age 68. And like anyone who's lost their parents, they grow deeper in your heart the longer you're around. Why do I mention her today? Well, because she was a foster child. From birth to age 13, she lived in a dozen homes until she finally landed at her father's home at age 13. She's a miracle. The fact that she was able to marry and raise eight children and have a good life says something, but it was through happenstance. We didn't have programs like this back then. So this is very personal for me. And so today, I'm just really grateful that Commissioner Saltzman started this targeted focus on the foster system as well. Thank you. So with my mother in my heart, I encourage all of my colleagues to vote yes, support the voter referral of this ballot renewal of Portland Children's Levy to support the future of our city's children. I vote aye.
Gonzalez.
I just want to thank the presenters today, Commissioner Saltzman, for the foresight so many years ago. It was great to hear children's voices in this building. We need to see more of that, hear more of that. It's felt in recent years that families and children have often been on the back burners unintentionally for some tough policy decisions we've had to make as we face the pandemic and other challenges. And I just love to hear their voices in these halls. And looking forward to, as we drive forward in the city, centering it on families and children. And I think the children's levy is a big part of it. So I vote aye. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Commissioner Ryan for bringing this item forward, and I'd also like to thank our invited guests for their testimony. And I'll take a moment to thank the Children's Levy staff and volunteers for the important work they do on behalf of our city's children. I'm glad to vote aye and refer this item to the voters.
Wheeler.
I want to thank all of our presenters today, all of our speakers, especially those from Portland's Children Levy, ERCO Elevate, as well as Friends of the Children, for joining us today and sharing what I thought was a really engaging and positive presentation. Thank you for that. I also want to thank Commissioner Dan Saltzman for his continued service to the community of Portland. Thank you, Duncan Campbell. Thank you for continuing your important legacy in this community and never leaving a stone unturned for the youth in our community and indeed around the nation. Thank you. And Lisa, what can I say? What a great foot soldier you have been. What dedication you've shown over a period of many, many years to make this program successful. And I can speak with some personal understanding of how rigorous you are and how accountable you are to the public that voted to support this overwhelmingly on prior occasions. It continues to be successful. And Dan, Ryan, thank you for your leadership as chair of the allocation committee. There's no question that the city has benefited tremendously from your educational background, the many years of work that you did with children, as well as the insight that you've provided on how the city can better support youth in our community. So I want to thank you personally for that leadership. I hope what people heard today was over the past two decades, the Children's Levy has provided invaluable support and enrichment and opportunities for children and youth within our community to really achieve the potential that they have the ability to achieve. This is a levy that better underscores the importance of giving kids a strong start to life through early childhood programming and resources for their guardians, as well as they support the development of their youth. And I think that's really one of the most brilliant things about this levy. It's not just the kids, it's holistically, how do you support the infrastructure that supports kids, including the families? And we heard some really important testimony on that front today. It also provides focused mentorship, as well as after-school programming, so that children can connect with adult role models in the community with the knowledge about what kind of skills and what kind of steps they need to take in order to be successful. And they can often do it through lived experience and direct connections with the circumstances that the youth in our community find themselves in. And increasingly, that is a complex set of factors for young people in our community to navigate on their own. And this is a statement that they're not on their own. This is a statement that we as a community support the youth in our community and will do what we can to support them. It quite literally fuels youth and families experiencing food insecurity through various hunger relief programs. And we all know that this is a situation that's getting more dire month to month. All of this is to say that the Children's Levy funds incredible, meaningful, and impactful work all across the community. It's my expectation that Portland voters will continue to demonstrate overwhelming support for this levy renewal as it goes back to the ballot in May, as they have over the last three cycles. We're not really going to delve on it today, but the political team behind this is top notch. I know that they understand that the voters of this city, and indeed, I think voters everywhere, are really scrutinizing any tax asks at this point. And thankfully, the Children's Levy, as was indicated right up front, has been extremely accountable and extremely effective with the dollars that have been entrusted by the taxpayers of this community. I believe this is one of the most accountable tax measures anyone anywhere will ever see on a ballot and for a worthy cause. So I join my colleagues here in strongly encouraging the people of this community to continue to support our youth. You did it overwhelmingly previously. If the need was strong 20 years ago, think about how important this is to youth today. in this environment where they are being challenged on every front. We need to support our kids. This is the cost-effective, efficient way for us to be able to do it in a way that we have proven works. So let's all get behind it. Let's all support it as this council overwhelmingly has. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Good luck. We'll be there with you, shoulder to shoulder. And we're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.